Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jennifer Dobson. I represent Mr. Olson, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Proceed.
The issue here is whether Mr. Olson was denied due process when the government destroyed 911 recordings of the incident after having received a discovery request by the defense asking that those be turned over. The U.S. Supreme Court and the Washington Supreme Court have said the government's failure to preserve potentially useful evidence constitutes a due process violation if the defendant demonstrates bad faith on the part of the government and prejudice to his right to a fair trial and to present a full defense.
So what's the evidence of bad faith here?
What
is the evidence of bad faith in this case?
Bad faith. So the courts have said that the presence or absence of bad faith turns on whether the government had knowledge of the fact that this was potentially useful to the defense. In this case, there was knowledge given to them through a discovery request. They asked for the 911 tapes. Defense counsel made that request 8 days after the incident. The state let more than 3 months elapse. And that's important because the government has set up a policy through NORCOM, which is a government agency.
But isn't it the police knowledge of the exculpatory value of the evidence?
It is the government's knowledge of the usefulness, the exculpatory,
well,
is either materially exculpatory,
right.
Exculpatory on its face, or potentially useful as potential exculpatory evidence. It is potentially useful. There's different standards here, and we acknowledge that this is not on its face exculpatory, but the question is, did the government have knowledge it was potentially useful? And that goes to the Groth case that came out of this court. It really goes to the question of whether they had knowledge of that. In Groth,
it starts you down the path, but it isn't the whole path. What else goes to bad faith?
Well, in this case, there's a policy for preserving evidence. In this case, it is that they need to request it from their own government agency within 90 days. And in Groth, at footnote 3, this court cites to U.S. versus Montgomery, which says, when the government fails to follow its own policy for preserving evidence, that this weighs strongly in favor of bad faith. In this case, we have the government receiving the discovery request 8 days after the incident. We have the government setting up its own policy for destruction of these 911 recordings within 90 days. We have the government not making sure that that request was put through per its own policy to make sure that these weren't destroyed.
But how do we distinguish between intentionally not forwarding the request or negligently not forwarding the request or merely innocently not forwarding the request?
Well, in Groth, it talked about negligence, and it talked about it in the sense that there was nothing indicating that the government should have known that this was potentially useful. In this case, we have the discovery request, and you add this with the policy, which was not complied with. We have a prosecutor, which it's very hard to believe that the King County prosecutor does not understand this purging policy, given that this is 911 tapes that are used, and it's on the face of the form that they use in every case.
But if we simply say that for every discovery request for potentially useful information that's not retained, it's automatically bad faith. Haven't we made all potentially useful information that's not materially exculpatory the same as exculpatory evidence? Because we're presuming bad faith by the mere fact of knowledge that there is a request for it.
We're not saying that it's a presumption. We're saying it's an inference here, and it's a strong inference when you couple that with the discovery request specifically for 911 tapes. and they're in the government's hands, and they've set up this policy for destruction. And that's important here. They've set up the policy, they've destroyed it, and there's a request made. How much further does the defense have to go?
But my question is, how does that make potentially useful information different than exculpatory information? In both cases, the state has to know that it's one, that it meets that criteria.
Yeah, we have to show also the potential usefulness. And so there's three things that need to be shown here, which would be why it's potentially useful and how that can be known to the state. We have to show bad faith, and we have to show prejudice. And so the combination of those three things in a case like this indicates and is strongly supports an inference of bad faith under the standard, which is that the absence or presence of bad faith is, for purposes of due process, is that it necessarily turns on whether the government's knowledge of the potential usefulness of this evidence. And here they had that knowledge.
Now, let's just talk briefly about prejudice. It's my understanding we're talking about 7 911 calls. Is that correct?
Yes. That's,
theoretically.
That's the understanding. And again, it's a little bit hard.
And so defense counsel was aware of the names of four of those callers. Is that correct?
There's a discrepancy if there were seven calls, whether they were multiple calls from the same caller or not. We're trying to glean stuff off the CAD report. And that's the...
So the CAD report does identify four people.
Yes, yes.
And so were those four people contacted?
Three were, and I'm not sure about the fourth. It seems to indicate that they weren't. I'm not sure. Certainly the fourth wasn't called. As a witness. But the problem here is that the CAD reports are not a comparable substitute for 911 recordings. I'm going to go ahead and take a minute of my rebuttal time to finish this point. When you have 911 calls, you have a firsthand account from the eyewitness. This case was built upon, the state's case was built upon eyewitnesses that placed my client in the driver's seat. CAD is a synthesis by another person that's picking and choosing what might be relevant. It's not a firsthand account of what that person is seeing. And so you can't have the same kind of effective cross-examination on the witness's memory and on their account with a CAD report that you can with 911 tapes and recordings. And that's our position here. This is how the defense is prejudiced, is that this case hinged upon eyewitness testimony about what they saw and who they saw in the driver's seat and whether there were multiple cars involved. And the 911 tape is just, the CAD, I'm sorry, is just simply not a comparable piece of evidence to the 911 tapes.
Thanks. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Jennifer Joseph, King County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, appearing for the State of Washington. We are asking this court to affirm Mr. Olson's convictions because he hasn't shown that the unpreserved 911 recordings are exculpatory or that they were destroyed in bad faith. We're also asking you to affirm the imposition of mandatory legal financial obligations for all the reasons set forth in the brief and in this court's recent opinion in State v. Shelton.
If this court says that requests for potentially useful information which are not honored and the records aren't requested and the defense never gets to see what's really in those records are always harmless, not prejudicial. There can't be bad faith. Knowledge isn't enough. How do they ever establish what's there? I mean, doesn't that just encourage the police to just ignore these requests and not preserve records?
I don't think so. The young blood test is very difficult to meet. It's very difficult to show bad faith, and I could concede that. But in this case, there isn't even a hint of bad faith here. That discovery motion, which you guys have in the clerk's papers, you can look at it. It is a boilerplate motion that asks for all kinds of things that are not relevant to this case. And it is the same form, I understand from my colleagues, it is the same request that's made in thousands of cases that are filed.
But you still have to take it seriously. I mean, whether you say there are parts of it that don't apply, you still have to, there's an obligation on the part of the prosecutor to read that discovery request and to comply with it.
I understand that. I acknowledge that. However, in this case, that document is filed the day after the charges are brought and never mentioned again. Those 911 tapes are never mentioned again until this motion to dismiss.
Were the 911 tapes mentioned in the certification for determination of probable cause?
I imagine that they were. I don't have that in front of me, but I imagine that they were. And I think it is, going through the prejudice prong, I think it is important for you to be aware of the facts here. We have several individuals who watched this entire incident, who saw Mr. Olson.
Were they also making, as I understand it, they were also making 911 calls?
They were making 911 calls. I also wanted to correct the record about how many callers there are in the CAD report. The trial judge actually makes a comment about this and says, defense, I don't know where you're getting seven out of this, but in any event, there's four. They give their names, their numbers are available. Three of them are called by the state. They are interviewed by the defense. Their statements remain completely consistent.
Well, we don't know that.
They're consistent with the gist of their reports, which is provided in the CAD log.
But we don't know about whether they're consistent with the 911 calls.
Well, the gist of the 911 calls is given in the CAD report. But again, let me talk about the prejudice here. You have all of these people who say, I never let this truck out of my sight. I saw it careen back and forth. I saw it take out the light pole. I saw it fall. Pieces fall off the truck. The defendant get out, try to move it, get back in, try to start it over and over again. We have unassailable evidence that this was the driver of the car. He's still sitting in the driver's seat when the police respond 5 minutes later. He admits that he had used heroin half an hour before this incident, and he's obviously impaired, according to all witnesses.
Does it come in at trial? Did it come in at trial that the 911 tapes had been lost?
I don't recall that it did. However, defense was able to effectively cross-examine all of these witnesses about their distractions, about having children in the car, about being on the phone while they're driving. The state's witness talked about driving as a divided attention task, and the defense used all of this evidence in closing argument to argue that it's quite possible that these witnesses didn't see a whole other car and two whole other individuals at the scene of the crime. It's just not credible, and there's no prejudice from excluding or from having these tapes destroyed. Now, I also want to correct about the defendant, that Mr. Olson is trying to recast the Wittenberger test in a way that is not what the test is. It's not what the Youngblood test is. It's not whether the court has noticed that defense is interested in this piece of evidence. It's whether the police knew that it was exculpatory. There's no indication and really no inference, reasonable inference from anything that we have that any of these reports would be exculpatory. The trial court pointed out that at best it might be impeaching information about whether the drivers were distracted.
But you're not disputing that it's potentially useful. And that the state had noticed that it was potentially useful.
It is in the category of potentially useful rather than exculpatory. And when this, presuming, I mean, just for the sake of argument, that the issue is the state knew, that, you know, this was part of the discovery request and the state didn't honor that, at best what we have is negligence. And when there's
we do have to presume that. I mean, we can't presume that the prosecutor has the ability to ignore a discovery request.
I agree.
And so what is the solution here? I mean, 90 days, is that long enough? I mean, when you consider that that's the speedy trial rule, is there any consideration given to maybe 180 days or putting the burden on somebody who's in the NORCOM system to check before they actually hit delete?
All of those things might be useful. They might improve things going forward, but in this case, as in many other cases, there was no reason to have these 911 calls. They weren't going to be useful. They were almost certainly going to be more incriminatory incriminating.
Well, but there was
get rid of them at all? I mean, it's in this day and age, it isn't because they take up space that's needed for something else, is it?
I'm not sure exactly what sort of equipment NORCOM has. The information from the record suggests that it might be actual physical tapes rather than storing things in the cloud.
I mean, this isn't a cheering situation to see.
I agree. But it's also nowhere near as difficult a situation as Groth encountered when the state destroyed almost all physical evidence from this murder that he had committed, and he had to defend himself against those charges 15 or 20 years after it happened. And in that case, even though that detective had specifically requested, or I think two detectives had specifically requested that the evidence room keep this evidence forever, it was still discarded. So it was, that was a situation where it was in violation, sort of, or arguably in violation of the policy, and that this detective had requested they be preserved. And even in that case, you couldn't show bad faith.
Well, but here, bad faith versus negligence. I mean, it does seem to me that the prosecutor, once you receive a discovery request, needs to pay attention to it, regardless of whether you think that this is a discovery request that comes in every case. And if it asks for 911 tapes, it seems as though there should be an obligation on the part of the prosecutor to immediately contact NORCON and say, do not destroy these.
And that was not done in this case. And you can call that negligent. I think in the practical arena of practicing law, in this situation, and of course I'm not a trial court attorney, so I'm not the best to speak to this, but these people are crushed with discovery, and these discovery requests are not tailored to the case at all, and I think that it's not surprising.
I don't think that's an excuse.
I'm not trying to make it into an excuse, but I am pointing out that if this sort of goes to the prejudice too. If the defense actually thought that these 911 calls were going to be valuable, they would have followed up on their request.
Well, they don't have to follow up. If they make the request in the first instance, I don't see that they have to do anything else.
Well, so another thing that they requested in this discovery request were the information about every county that their witnesses had ever lived in. And we didn't give that over either. This is not relevant, and it's not something that we have to...
Well, that's different. The 911 tapes were relevant.
Well, they're relevant, but they're not exculpatory. And there's no showing that there's no inference that they were exculpatory here. There's no way that you can show bad faith if you can't show that the police knew that there was exculpatory information.
I guess the concern is going forward. I certainly don't want there to be any notion or an opinion that somehow condones the behavior that was engaged in by the prosecutor.
Sure, and I can understand that. Discovery requests should be honored.
And it isn't an excuse just because there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, I guess, you know, you say you're not trying to make it an excuse, but you keep coming back to it. So I kind of hearing you say, yes, this is an excuse, and we have a terrible time, and we're so busy, and we get so many requests, and it's just terrible. And, you know, if the defense attorneys would just do their job, then everything would be fine.
Well, let me back away from that entirely. All right. Let's call this negligent. The state was negligent by failing to have those requests.
And shouldn't we then presume that there was prejudice and shift the burden to the state to demonstrate that there was?
No, there's...
You've deprived them of evidence.
That was not exculpatory. If you have to look at the Youngblood and Wittenbarger test, that's a part of it that you can't skip over. It's not bad faith unless the police knew that there was exculpatory information on there.
It's automatically bad faith if they knew it was exculpatory.
Yes.
If they knew it was useful, they have to establish the bad faith.
And that has not been done in this case. Thank you.
Your Honor, the state's argument seems to be because we have overwhelming evidence in the trial, then this wasn't prejudicial. But the overwhelming evidence test does not work in this kind of error. And that is because it necessarily is a artificially one-sided record because defense evidence was not preserved and was destroyed. So this kind of prejudice, you can't necessarily, it, It's similar to State v. Jones when you have a discovery sanction and evidence is excluded. You can't go to the overwhelming evidence test. You have to look at whether the evidence was relevant and whether it was cumulative, or in this case, whether there was comparable evidence here. It was clearly relevant. There was not comparable evidence here, and it wasn't cumulative. This is not a situation where it was not prejudicial. But more importantly, they seem to be arguing that if the discovery request is for 911 tapes, we get a million of these. We don't have to really pursue them very quickly. Well, if they are crushed by these discovery requests, then they need to change the policy. Now, I did go on last night and look at the form, and they have changed it from 90 days to 120 days, but that was not in existence during this case. But they're still setting a policy for automatic destruction of evidence. And we're not trying to say that the policy was set in bad faith, which would be the Wittenbarger situation. We're not arguing that, but we're arguing here. When you have a discovery request and that indicates the potential usefulness to the defense, you cannot sit on it and wait for your own purge policy to trigger and allow that to be destroyed. And so we would ask that you reverse the convictions here.
Thank you, counsel.